Right, first of all, I'm going to sit on a stool because I had a vertigo attack last night. And so I'm not my steadiest. So, sorry, I'm a lot better than last night, believe me. But just so you know, I'm not doing the super sort of casual, I don't really care what happens kind of thing. Could someone give out the teaching notes? And if there are any Bibles... If anyone got some of our usual people who give out the Bibles who are not here, thank you, Christine. That's great. Any, if your hand, put your hand up if you could do with a Bible. And while they're coming round, I'm going to ask you this: who likes going on travels around the globe? Who likes? Yes, great, isn't it? So great. Has anyone ever been to a place where they had to be really careful culturally because of differences? Mimi, where have you been that was a bit different culturally to you? Istanbul, yeah. East Anglia. And Mark thought you said East Anglia. Yeah, it's very, very weird things go on in East Anglia. Yeah. Well, we kind of like travelling, don't we? But sometimes we have to look up a few things so that we're not going to make mistakes culturally. So, like, if you go to Morocco, apparently, you know how sometimes we here we just sort of walk along the road and we see someone we know and we go hi and then we walk on by. Don't do that in Morocco, because that is such an insult, because it's not a proper hello. It's a like, I don't really care. Hi, you know, I'm running. So you never do that in Morocco. And if you're in Iran, don't give someone the thumbs up, because it's a real insult, okay? And these things, cultural differences are real, aren't they? And that's why, you know, sometimes people travel abroad to countries where there's lots of poverty and they get culture shock, don't they? Because the situation is so different. And when missionaries go to other countries, they have to do their homework about the communities they're going to, because the last thing you want to do is arrive there and immediately insult the people. So there are sort of cultural differences. And Jesus was wise in everything, wasn't he? But he didn't mind taking on cultural differences when they needed to be taken on. He challenged the culture. And he challenged human thinking. And there are many moments. We know Jesus was loving and kind, but there were many shock horror moments in Jesus' ministry. Many moments where the culture around would have gone, and immediately worried about what was going. And we're going to be thinking about Zacchaeus. Have we got the picture up there? She says she turning around carefully. Okay, there we have Zacchaeus. We're going to have him staying up there, just dangling his feet from the tree while I speak, because I particularly love this this painting. Because you see Zacchaeus clearly in the dark and Jesus clearly in the light, and the person who painted this has really captured the hiding nature of Zacchaeus. So we're going to look at Zacchaeus today. And when we see this story, we see Jesus being merciful. At the time, in this culture, at this time, the people would see what Jesus was doing as outrageous and unwise and probably even sinful. They didn't like him sort of having any dealings with people like Zacchaeus. I'm going to read the passage, which is Luke 19, 1-9, if you want to follow. I'm reading from the New International Version. So this is a real sort of summary of the story. We know other things must have happened. After verse 7, when the people are saying he's gone to be the guest of a sinner, we assume there's a little bit of time before Zacchaeus turns around. So this is a summary of the story. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be a guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham." And that last bit, when he says this man too is a son of Abraham, it's like Jesus is saying, he's also part of the promise. He's a tax collector. But the promise is for him of a Messiah as well. And also Jews would use that phrase, son of Abraham, not just to sort of indicate a natural descent, but also that the person has spiritual understanding. And so Jesus is saying, the promise is for him too, guys. And look, he's got spiritual understanding. So let's look at the place. Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem for the last time. He was passing through Jericho, which was located on the Jordan Valley. Now, this city was an oasis. It was like a little paradise. There were palm trees and rose gardens and a lovely climate. If it was a holiday brochure and you were flicking through and you got to Jericho, you would want to go there. It was beautiful. Not only was it beautiful, but it was a prosperous trade city. It was a really important place on the way to Jerusalem. And a lot of traffic travelled through because the roads were connected to the north and the west and the south. And so it was a good place to be. On top of that, in that place, in Jericho, there was a principal custom house for the Roman Empire. All right, one of the big important places for customs. And that was located there. So this is the place that Jesus chose to make a hugely important point about why he had come. And then we look at the person. So yes, he's Zacchaeus, and he's a tax collector. If I had been there in the crowd and said to people, "Oh, who's that guy up the tree?" As you might do, really. "Who's the guy up the tree?" Probably the answer would come back as, "Oh, he's a tax collector." Because we do that as humans, don't we? We categorise people by what they do. "Oh, he's a tax collector." And they might not even have said his name. We categorise people like that. So yes, he was a tax collector. He was hated by everyone. He was seen as a betrayer of his own people. Because the Jews were under Roman rule, as you know, and tax collectors worked for them. So, and what was even worse, the tax collectors had to collect a fixed amount of tax from the people, but they went a bit further and they upped it and they collected more than was the fixed tax, and they pocketed the difference. So these guys were hated, and Zacchaeus was the chief collector, the chief tax collector in a prosperous city. So he was in charge of a whole network of basically extortioners. That's who this guy was. But Jesus saw the person. He didn't categorise him. He didn't see Zacchaeus the tax collector. He saw Zacchaeus the person. And he always does this. He didn't look at the position in life that Zacchaeus had, he saw the man. And he saw in Zacchaeus a man who was trying to find security for himself and probably his family. And he was trying different ways to be secure. He was finding different ways to make himself safe in life. But he also saw that Zacchaeus was spiritually curious. And he saw straight to the man that these things about him. Zacchaeus was probably at the point in life where he was saying, is this all there is to life? Wealth had not brought him peace. Wealth had not brought him happiness. So let's dig a bit deeper. Do you remember, some of you will remember, because you're as old as me. Many years ago, we had these little bracelets, woven bracelets with WWJD on. And what did it stand for? What would Jesus do? And it was like a little reminder that if you were in a situation where you were perhaps tempted to do the wrong thing, you looked at your bracelet and you thought, oh, what would Jesus do? I better hold back here on my temper. And they were really good reminders. I think we kind of need, when we look at other people, we need a different kind of bracelet. We need although that's part of it, we need a WWJS. What would Jesus see in someone else? Because sometimes we see what they seem to be, and we don't see who they are and what their need is. So Zacchaeus was looking for safety, first of all, in position. He wanted to look after his family. We assume he had a family. And he thought he could achieve it through position and success. But he was wrong. He wasn't a winner. He was a loser, a very rich loser. He was hated by his own people and suspected all the time. Nobody trusted him. And he was used by the Romans. They didn't care about him. He was just useful. And he got a position that he thought would give him security, but it left him without any security, even in his own community. I bet there were a few people waiting for him to have a nasty event. You know? The Romans didn't care about him. Have you ever seen one of those films where there's a real rogue, a bad guy, and he does terrible, treacherous, nasty things, and then he gets home with his family and he's bouncing the baby and cuddling his children in a very tender way. And he sets up his life being a rogue out there for his family, and he doesn't care what he does to other people. And then he ends up living a life of conflict and danger, looking over his shoulder because he knows he's hated. And that was a bit like Zacchaeus' life. Although we've not got no reason to believe he went out and was violent to people, he was not a nice man. And he looked for safety in that. What he thought was a position of privilege was actually a position of pain. And what he thought was a position that would give him peace was actually a position that would give him moments of panic, because he didn't trust anyone and they didn't trust him, and relationships were at all-time low. So he looked for it in position and it wasn't found. He looked for it in wealth. He thought if he could achieve a certain level of wealth, he could cope with anything in life. And he was ridiculously rich. He would have been ridiculously rich. If riches could make you happy, he should have been the happiest man on the planet. You know, he didn't have any financial problems at all. But it didn't leave him feeling content. It didn't leave him feeling secure. His riches actually worked against him. And there's a passage here that I read a couple of months ago when I spoke about the sower, about the rich and the kingdom of God. If you want to look at it, it's Luke 18, verses 18 to 27, about the rich young ruler. And this is a real example of how riches work against us. A certain ruler asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honour your father and mother. All these I have kept since I was a boy," he said. When Jesus heard this, he said to him, "You still lack one thing. Sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me." When he heard this, he became very sad because he was very wealthy. Jesus looked at him and said, "How hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of God. Indeed, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God." Those who heard this asked, "Who then can be saved?" Jesus replied, "What is impossible with man is possible with God." Now, there are various explanations of the figurative language Jesus chose when he's talking about a camel going through the eye of a needle. Some people say it's because there was a gate in the city wall, and when the camel got to that point, you had to take all the baggage off before the camel could get through, which is a nice helpful thing, isn't it? Makes you think about all rich people having to get rid of everything. The problem is the gate hasn't been found, so, you know, we have to remain open-minded about exactly what Jesus meant. Another explanation is that the word camel is similar to a word for a thick rope. And so again, the impossibility comes in, doesn't it? Because you can't get a thick rope through the eye of a needle. It doesn't really matter. It's, you know, the culture at the time knew what he meant. It doesn't really matter. It's just that Jesus was pointing out that it seems impossible. It seems impossible. But he didn't actually say it was impossible. The people said that. What did he say? Look back in verse 24. What did he say? Jesus looked at him and said, "How hard it is." It's really hard. If you're rich, it's really hard because you've got your own financial God created. So it's hard. The real encouragement with this is that God can save anyone. Now, usually, when you hear someone say, "Oh, God can save anyone," they usually mean, even really bad people. Even criminals in prison become Christians. That's what they mean when they say God can save anyone. But basically, Jesus is saying, God can save anyone, even rich people. Even rich people. So Zacchaeus was very wealthy, but he didn't feel any safer through his wealth. And then going off at a tangent for the third thing I want to say is he was looking for safety in a crowd. He was looking for safety in a crowd. He thought he could achieve it that way. You know when people go and meet a celebrity, or they go to meet the Queen, or they go in a crowd and they just want to see the Queen go by, or there's a walkabout and the royals are shaking hands, or when people go and they go to a concert and they want to meet the person who was in the band, or they want to see the actor or actresses. Now, some people, because they've got that about them, they can push to the front because they want to meet them. But the majority of people, kind of, you want to see, but you don't want to actually meet them because you think, "Oh, what would I say? I'd say something stupid." And so most people are quite content to stand at the back. They want to see the person and say, "Oh, I saw them in real life." But they don't actually want to meet them because it's just a little bit scary. It's a little bit scary. And they don't want to look stupid in their presence. So we have to ask ourselves, did Zacchaeus set out to meet Jesus? Didn't position himself very well, did he? And it says, actually, in the passage,
that he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. And before that, it says where it says that he was short, that he had to he couldn't see over the crowd. Okay, verse 3, he wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So I don't think it's his intention to actually meet Jesus. He just wants to have a good look, and so he gets up a tree to do that. Because up a tree, you can hide in the foliage, can't you? You can see him here. You know, it's a little bit dark, lots of foliage around, and don't have to be seen yourself. You can see, but you don't have to be seen. Do you think the crowd wanted Jesus to meet Zacchaeus? They certainly wouldn't have let him through, even if he'd want to. They definitely wouldn't want Zacchaeus to be blessed in any way by getting to meet Jesus. That's the last thing they wanted. Because through man's eyes, Zacchaeus was self-centered. He was small-minded. He was a thieving liar. That's who he was to the people. But through love's eyes, through the eyes of Jesus, he was a generous, large-hearted believer who was capable of giving more than half of what he owned away. Because Jesus always saw the person underneath the mask. He always sees who we really are. He saw Zacchaeus' potential. The crowd saw Zacchaeus' history. Jesus saw his potential. And he always sees your potential. Always sees your potential. I mean, Jesus is not naive. He's well aware of what tax collectors are. He even made a parable out of it, didn't he? In Luke 18, verses 9 to 14, if you want to follow, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. And in the parable, it's not the tax collector that comes out looking bad. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. See, Jesus deals with individuals, doesn't he? He deals with individuals. He looks at the heart, and he could see whose heart needed some work out of those two. And of course, we could sit quite comfortably listening to the Zacchaeus story, because we can sit there thinking, oh yeah, he needed sorting out. Rah, rah, Jesus. Yes, he was a bad un. Good job Jesus came along and sorted him out. And we can sit there feeling great. But this passage about this parable is a bit more unsettling, isn't it? Because it's the goody-goody who isn't really good. It's the person saying, I'm good, I'm just fine, I'm okay, I'm a very good person. This is about that kind of person, and it's much more unsettling than the Zacchaeus story. Because these people, they're not thinking about the darkest recesses of their minds and their hearts. They're just thinking of the surface of things. I'm good, I'm not as bad as some people, I'm okay. But we have to ask the question, if we're in that situation, are we perfect? Because that's God's standard. Perfection. Are we perfect? Are we that standard? Are we, as it says in verse 9, confident of our own righteousness? Because that's not a good place to be. Jesus still deals with individuals now. He always looks at the heart. And there is only one safe place. Zacchaeus found it wasn't in success and building a career. He found it wasn't in wealth. And then he found he couldn't hide from Jesus. Because he's up a tree feeling very safe. And the next minute, Jesus is looking at him. And he's not done very well at finding safety in hiding in the crowd and even up a tree. There's no safe place to hide from Jesus. Not in a crowd, not up a tree, not behind the foliage. No safe place. But the good news is that there is safety in the love and faithfulness of God. When you make a decision to make him your refuge, when you make a decision to enter his kingdom by surrendering your life to him, you find a safe place. Because in God's kingdom, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. It's not where you start in life, however bad that has been. It's not where you start, it's where you finish in God's kingdom. Outward appearances can fool the masses, can't they? Think about all the shock in the country when they find out that some celebrity has actually been doing bad stuff. Everyone's like, oh, I can't believe it of that person. It's very easy to have this outward appearance that fools the masses. Only Jesus can see what really binds us. But we have to want to be free for him to do something about that. So you might not be bound by ambition or wealth like Zacchaeus was, but you might be bound by belief in your own goodness. So notice that Jesus didn't tear into Zacchaeus, did he? Not the way he did tear into the Pharisees. He could have said, you're a sinner, Zacchaeus, I condemn you, you are ripping people off. And he could, but he didn't do that. We can assume he was obviously frank with him because of the result. But he was also kind. And in verse 6, in another version, it says Zacchaeus made haste and came down and received him joyfully when Jesus asked him to come down. Now, I think he wouldn't have come down quite so joyfully if he'd felt condemned and without hope in the presence of Jesus. There was something about his encounter with Jesus that started to free him from his past. He'd been an outcast. He'd been excluded. And suddenly, he was being sought out by Jesus and brought to the front. So, so often we think that if we are going to become Christians, Jesus will only welcome us if we've really sorted our lives out. If we got it all sorted, okay? That's not who Jesus was looking for. He wasn't looking for the sorted out people. And because of that, we can distance ourselves from Jesus. Zacchaeus didn't need someone to remind him of how bad he was. He needed someone to say, this is not the end of your story. Another tax collector, Matthew, ended up as a disciple. Now, come on, think about the community this happened in. This was another shock horror moment in Jesus' ministry. If you're an up-and-coming rabbi like Jesus, choosing a tax collector to be on your leadership team is probably not a very good move, culturally. You know, we don't think about that enough. That who Matthew was, what his history was, and he was on the leadership team around Jesus. So, although it seemed like probably a crazy move to the people at the time, the culture at the time, actually it was a masterful move in making his point about saving grace. It was masterful to make a tax collector one of the disciples. So, you know, if you've never completely trusted Jesus with your life, if you've only done it in half measures, because perhaps you think, oh, there's so much stuff I don't think he could deal with. He can deal with a lot. He can deal with anything that you bring to the foot of his cross and ask for healing and for being set free from it. I'm just going to leave you with the verses in Matthew. Might as well go with Matthew's voice, that tells of Jesus' calling of him to become a disciple. And you'll find that in Matthew 9:9-13. And I want to finish with these words, because this is what Jesus wants to do for people with dodgy pasts, and this is what Jesus wants to do with people who think they're fine. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat and eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." And we're all sinners. There's not one perfect person in this room. We're all sinners who need to turn around and follow Jesus, because he sees the potential in you. He's got great plans for you. And none of that is ruled out by a past. It's all about going forward with Jesus and a freshness and freedom and forgiveness and becoming the person that he initially created you to be.